broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network. This is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war.
Welcome to this edition of Cultural Baggage here on the Drug Truth Network. Tonight we're going to hear from Nurse Mary Lynn Mathry and Al Byrne. They're directors of Patients Out of Time. We'll also hear a little sound clip I did with Steve Cubby. He's an American who ran for governor in the state of California. He was one of the authors of Prop 215, their medical marijuana bill, and he's now living in British Columbia, more or less in exile from charges where they want him here in the U.S. for minor amounts of drugs. He has a special medical condition, and we'll hear a little bit more about that later on. And I guess without much further ado, let's go ahead and bring in our guest for the evening. I think we have first online with us Nurse Mary Lynn Mathry.
Good evening.
Hello, Mary Lynn. Welcome to Cultural Baggage. Glad you could be with us.
Glad to be here.
Yes, ma'am. Let's start with what I think is perhaps the top story of the new year, the fact that GW Pharmaceuticals has obtained Food and Drug Administration permission to do phase three studies of their liquid cannabis product, Sativex. Your thoughts, ma'am. What have you heard in this regard?
Well, it's obviously just wonderful news. They've been struggling to get something going in the United States for quite some time. Trying to deal with the FDA while the drugs are office continues its assault on medical patients. And basically what they had to do was literally find someone in the U.S. who would be willing to invest and partner with them, as opposed to bringing, you know, just a foreign company into the United States to bring this product in. So they did find the partner. And we're looking forward to the studies starting up. And that will be pain for terminal cancer patients will be the area of study.
Yes, and I think that's wonderful. They have done prior studies in Great Britain and elsewhere, I think, that showed it's beneficial for, those suffering from AIDS or back pain or other, you know, terrible ailments. And I think it is good. Now, I wanted to ask your thought. There are many people in America, thousands if not millions, who might benefit from this, and this could be sometime down the road to their benefit as well, right?
Yeah, that's the shame of it. This process is still going to take quite a while. Sativex, the GW's product that they will be doing the research on here in the United States, they originally did the research for multiple sclerosis patients, and it was they just found great success with it. That is available now in Canada and hopefully soon throughout Europe. But right now, Canada was the country that took the lead in saying we, you know, accept your studies and this looks like a safe medicine, which has certainly opened the door for the U.S. But the U.S., what we're having here, the reason they're studying the pain patients, I think it's probably they could get permission. There's a lot more leeway for cancer pain patients in terms of studying, so I think they could do a faster track. But it still, if this goes forward, it'll still be a couple of years before Sativex is available to patients in the U.S.
Now, you work with many of the national and with the national and the state nurses associations. They have, in many cases, come out in favor of medical marijuana. And I just wanted to get your thoughts. The state of Rhode Island, just 10 days ago or so, approved medical marijuana, where the Senate had previously and then the legislature overrode the governor's veto to approve medical marijuana. I think that once again shows that the people, even at the state the state legislators, are ahead of the federal representation's analysis.
Right. I think the politicians on the state level are finally catching up with their voters, and probably because they feel the vote a lot stronger than on the federal level. But, you know, as some might know, the governor did veto that, and then luckily the, you know, the state reps overrode that, excuse me, overrode that veto to make it legal. But they've got a real strong, various strong voices in Rhode Island, and of course the Rhode Island Nurses Association was one of those voices, and I think that helps with the public as well to hear that healthcare professionals, you know, can see that it's safe, can say that it should be available. The patients are there. The public are finally getting it, and the politicians on the local level, you're right, they're listening to their voters.
Now, I hope you heard me mention earlier that we're going to do a little clip I did with Steve Cubby. He represents kind of the diverse set of circumstances, people who can benefit from medical marijuana. You were talking about MS. We've been talking about cancer pain, et cetera. And let's go ahead and play that little clip from him. I want to get your comments when we're done, Mary Lynn.
Okay. Hi, my name is Steve Cubby. And the bad news is that I have terminal cancer and have been told by doctors that I have as little as 6 months to live and that everyone who's ever had my disease has died a horrible death. The good news is that they've been telling me that each year for 30 years now, and I'm celebrating my 30th year living with one of the deadliest forms of cancer known, thanks to the miraculous and healing effects of cannabis. Everything that they've told us has been a lie. They've lied about the effects of cannabis. They lie about their authority to have this kind of law. They lie about the necessity. They lie about the judgments and the laws itself. Here in Canada, the law has fallen, but the court refuses to answer the questions that we put before it. And I ask myself, why is all of this dishonesty going on? Our pot laws are created and enforced by alcoholics. People that have brain damage from alcoholism still talk and behave normally, but they're incapable of any kind of creative thought. They're largely operating on the reptilian midbrain. The behavior of a lot of these people, I don't like to cast differences between people, but the people that are wreaking violence and lying and cheating and doing everything they can to harm us strike me as being pathetic wreckages of human beings who, because of long-term drinking habits, because of their own guilt or psychological dysfunctionality, have resorted to alcohol. And these people tend to be the most violent angry opponents that we face in this ongoing cultural war.
Now, Mary Lynn, I don't expect you to address the mention of alcohol there, though I do agree with Mr. Cubby 100% on that. But Steve, and I don't think he even mentioned, he has a form of adrenal cancer. He should have been dead decades ago, and yet he shows the diversity, the many ways that medical marijuana can help people. MS patients sometimes are able to get up out of their wheelchair and begin walking again. Is that true?
Yes, I mean, we've had MS patients who their sight has improved because of, you know, the nerve. MS is a disease of where the nerve fibers, the covering of them, breaks up. So it depends on where it affects, where that's happening throughout the body. So people with MS can, you know, present very differently. But it's helped with the eyesight. It's helped them get up and walk, which is usually the main thing, crippling, as a crippling disease. Yeah, there are just numerous uses for it. And with the cancer, it's helpful, whether it be for the nausea, lack of appetite, the nausea and vomiting from the chemotherapy, just the lack of appetite patients have, the pain that they go through. There are so many uses for cannabis. Al will be talking later about our conference, but one of the things we try to present is the new research coming out. And it's just amazing to show how important our own body's cannabinoids are to us for normal functioning, and that's opening the door to see how this plant can be used as medicine to help for so many ailments.
Now, Marilyn, I'm not, you know, a doctor by any means, and perhaps my knowledge is dangerous, but I want to ask you something. The obfuscation of pain, is it called to obdurate the pain? Is that what medical marijuana does? It helps you to compartmentalize it, to subjugate it, in effect?
Well, that's we've heard lots of, I think a lot depends on the type of pain. Maybe I can't even say the word tonight. but yes, maybe that, and or the other thing that patients have noticed, that some who may use an opiate for pain management,
yes,
there's a synergy between cannabis and the opiate, such that a person would be able to use a much lower dose of the opiate and get a greater effect of pain. The other thing patients say is it helps them not concentrate about the pain. It's as though it's, as you say,
compartmentalized.
Thank you. I just can't get it out tonight. You know, and they can kind of move it back and focus on other issues.
Yes, and I think, you know, again, we mentioned earlier that you work with the nurses' associations, and I want to, I beat this up every chance I get, because even as recently as last week, John Walters was saying there are no recognized medical associations in support of medical marijuana. But can you name a few? How many are there?
Oh, my goodness. I would recommend people go to our website at medicalcannabis.com, and we have a list of support organizations. I'm going to say 60. Maybe it grows all the time. Past 60. It's much greater. I mean, we've got at least, you know, 10 state nurses associations before the American Nurses Association joined, the American Public Health. I missed that. I missed that he dared to say that again, because healthcare organizations and healthcare professionals all over are recognizing that. And finally, I do agree with Steve Cubby. He's certainly right when he's saying we've been lied to. We've been lied to over the years, and there is no question about its safety. Just the simple safety factor has been proven over and over and over again. You cannot overdose from this medicine. We cannot say that about aspirin. We can't, you know, things that we take for granted over the counter. We can't say that the safety factor is as great with those drugs as it is with cannabis. And yet they keep trying to make it this big, dangerous, evil drug.
So very true. Well, Mary Lynn, I do appreciate it, and in that I do have another director of Patients Out of Time there on the phone. I want to go here in just a moment to Mr. Al Byrne. Mary Lynn, we thank you so much for being with us. If you would have Al listen to this, we're going to, each week we play the official government truth. It's put together by our reporter, Winston Francis. We offer cash money to any drug warrior willing to come on this show, and of course they cannot do it. And so we produce this on their behalf because they are cowards.
Look, if you still think that marijuana is safe, then you haven't been paying attention. Marijuana will have your children in the streets committing crimes, carrying guns, assaulting people, stealing things, and participating in gang fights. It will make them go crazy and perform lewd sex acts on one another until they finally piss blood and die. You think it's a joke? It isn't. Last year, it was reported in every mainstream news outlet that marijuana causes mental disorders, hallucinations, confused thinking, strange behavior, and even schizophrenia. And that's not it. According to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, marijuana use is associated with problem behaviors, including criminal behaviors. The survey concluded that frequent marijuana smokers are more likely to commit certain crimes, among them stealing, carrying a handgun, and attacking someone with, quote, the intention of seriously injuring them. And listen to this. An article in the National Library of Medicine titled Sex as a Function of Marijuana Use Among Adolescent Detainees concluded that there was, quote, a relationship between marijuana use and risky sexual behavior. Go look it up. Just recently, a woman died of kidney failure on a cannabis drug trial, according to the BBC. The coroner stated that there was no doubt that marijuana was a contributory factor. Drug legalization advocates contend that marijuana is safe when every mainstream news outlet and government agency says otherwise. I guess it comes down to this. Who are you going to believe? This has been Winston Francis with the official Government Truth.
All right, do we have Al with us?
Yes, hi, dear.
Hi, Al. Yes, this is Al Byrne. He's another director of Patients Out of Time. Welcome to Cultural Baggage. Al, did you get a chance to hear that official government truth?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there's not a whole lot you can really say in response, except it's just a repetition of 70, 80, 90 years of the same old stuff. Marijuana leads to insanity, criminality, and death.
Yeah, it's absurd.
It is absurd. Well, let's talk about your organization, Patients Out of Time. Tell us a little bit about the beginnings, who are the directors, and what you guys do.
Sure. We really came together in an informal fashion way back in 1990. Marilyn and I were directors of Normal at the time, and we wanted to hold a conference on medical cannabis. We invited the first five medical patients in the country on the IND program to come and speak.
Now tell folks again who those five are.
Okay, at the time, they were Bob Randall, Herb Rosenfeld, George McMahon, Elvie Masika, and Corinne Millette.
And what is their distinction?
Their distinction being that they were the first five U.S. citizens that received medical cannabis from the federal government under the Investigational New Drug Program, which is a title. But it basically allowed these people under medical supervision to have cannabis to treat their different diseases, and they all had different things wrong with them. But we were lucky. We called them together. They all came. Bob Randall was sensational. He was the mentor of the group. We were lucky in that C-SPAN televised the entire conference, ran it over and over again. Normal got 40,000 phone calls in a month, and medical marijuana was launched as a topic of conversation.
And to this day, Irv, as I understand it, has received over 200 pounds of this government-supplied marijuana.
That's correct, 220 pounds.
Irv
is the longest-living patient that has received federal government marijuana now that Bob Randall is deceased. And Irv uses it for basically for pain. He has a very serious bone tumor disease that causes him great pain. And he uses it continually for pain. It helps him immensely. He is a very successful stockbroker in Florida. And his government dose is 11 cured ounces every 26 days, I believe. So he uses an enormous quantity of marijuana. And that's a topic of discussion that we can go off on, but because the marijuana is so inferior, really, in quality, he has to smoke so much. But to get back to your question, in 1995, we formed Patients Out of Time as a 501c3, a non-profit charity. It's an educational charity, and our mission since then has been to educate the public and healthcare professionals in particular about the protocol surrounding medical cannabis. Our conference that we have coming up in Santa Barbara, California, April 6th through 8th of this year, is the fourth in a series, and all of the people that I've mentioned, the medical cannabis patients, the federal patients will be there, as will any number of California patients. We have doctors and nurses coming from the United States, from Canada, from Israel, the Netherlands, the United Kingdom, Spain. It's state-of-the-art cannabis research mixed with patients, with cannabis patients.
Now, Al, as I understand it, Patients Out of Time, you and Mary Lynn have worked with many of the state and national organizations to educate them, to help bring about understanding, which in turn helped to bring about some of these changes in law in the now 11 states.
That's correct, Dean. There's been literally thousands of people that have worked on the issues that you and I have worked on, and I give them all credit. But our organization has specifically targeted, if you will, healthcare professionals and their organizations. And what we've done is we have educated that leadership, who in turn has taken the question to their membership, all professionals as well, And then we've asked them, now that you know what we have to offer, do you think patients should have medical cannabis or not? And it has been really heartwarming, because these organizations generally vote in the 90 percentile plus for medical marijuana to be made available immediately. And as Marilyn mentioned earlier, we're not talking about the tiny little groups that nobody's heard about here. We're talking about the American Nurses Association, the oldest and largest healthcare organization in the United States, the American Public Health Association. They've got like 1,100,000 doctors there. They have a membership, rather. They have endorsed this issue. So this is a very, very easy issue to stand behind. And our next quest, if you will, with our education, is to have the politicians listen to a different source of information than the propaganda machine that you ran for me to start off this interview.
yes,
we have a belief as an organization that this is a medical issue, not a law enforcement issue. And that if you want information about therapeutic cannabis, you should listen to people in white coats, not blue coats. Meaning you should listen to doctors and nurses and researchers, not people who are invested in the law enforcement industry.
So true, Al. So true. Now, I don't know if you'll specifically have any people making presentations in this regard, but as a layman, I see these studies coming out of Israel that use of marijuana following a stroke or a head injury helps cut down on brain swelling, and that, you know, in many other ways it helps shrink certain tumors. And yet the U.S. government refuses these studies, except, thank God for this phase 3 study on Sativex. Now, what might we expect to, topics might we hear about at this conference in Santa Barbara on April 6th through 8th?
All right, to go right to your question, we have a young lady named Natalia Kogan. She's a PhD. She's coming to us from the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And she's gonna spend some time talking to us exactly about what you brought up. In Israel, they are treating brain tumors with different cannabinoids with amazing success. These tumors are simply shrinking and going away. She's going to report on those kind of studies. She's also going to report on a study that has come out of her university just this week, actually, that shows that we have actually a cannabis receptor in our bones. We know now we have them in our lungs, and we have them in our organs, and we have them here. Now we have them in our bones, and it seems that that having them in our bones using cannabis allows us to maintain our bone density longer in life, which of course is very important, especially to women and their problems with bone loss over the years. We also have people coming from, we have a doctor coming from the United Kingdom, Stuart Ratcliffe. He's been involved in 4 different studies over about that number of years in the United Kingdom using Sativex on MS patients, using it for pain, using it for other spasticity, different uses. He's going to talk to us all about the success they've had in using this GW pharmaceutical Sativex for MS. We have a fellow from the Netherlands, the head of the Netherlands medical marijuana program, is coming. They've actually had some failures on that program and some great successes. And he's going to tell us about both of them, and we can make up our minds which one we may want to have someday over here.
Al, we are running out of time.
Sure.
I want you to, I do appreciate it, tell Mary Lynn thank you. I hope the listeners understand that the truth is there. It needs to be absorbed, understood, and made use of. And once again, please give them your website so that they can tune in and learn more about this conference.
MedicalCannabis.com. Just go there, and we'll lead you to all the right places. And please read the things we have to say. I think you'll find it very interesting.
Al Byrne, Marilyn Mathry, patience out of time. I thank you very much.
Good night, Dave.
It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects.
Birth defects, miscarriage, premature birth, feeling sad, anxious, or empty, irritability, anger, loss of pleasure or interest, sleeping too much or too little, depression, trouble concentrating, suicide. Time's up. The answer, Accutane for acne. Another FDA-approved product.
Hi, this is Phil Smith of the Drug War Chronicle with this week's corrupt cop story for the Drug Truth Network. This week we're going to the Windy City, where former Chicago police officer John Smith was sentenced to 24 years in federal prison on January 5th for stealing cocaine from the police evidence room, selling it to drug dealers, and then claiming his new extravagant lifestyle came from winning big in Vegas. Smith maintained his innocence at the hearing, but U.S. District Judge Elaine Bucklow was not impressed, noting that he had used more than $1 million in drug deal profits to buy property, luxury cars, and expensive gifts for mistresses. He was found guilty of drug conspiracy, money laundering, tax evasion, and filing false statements on tax returns. Among items seized from Smith was a $177,000 Rolls Royce. Ah, living large, but now not for the next 20 years or so. As always, there are more corrupt cop stories this week. Check them out online at www.stopthedrugwar.org.
Poppygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
Afghanistan's President Hamid Karzai said last week that the drug trade is a greater menace to his nation than terrorism and poses an existential threat to his country. The trafficking of heroin accounts for more than half of U.S.-occupied Afghanistan's revenue and has been called the backbone of its economy. Since the U.S. invasion in 2001, Afghan heroin production has increased 30-fold and now accounts for 90% of global supply. U.S.-occupied Afghanistan alone now produces about five times more heroin than did the entire world combined in 1970, the year of the U.S. Controlled Substances Act and the U.N. Convention on Psychotropic Substances. Putting these figures into perspective, please consider that for each and every one of the 750,000 Americans arrested annually on marijuana charges, the U.S. oversees the distribution of nearly 1.5 pounds of Afghan heroin. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
Okay, a couple of quick program notes. Next week on Cultural Baggage, our guest will be Nate Blakeslee. He's the author of Tulia, Race, Cocaine, and Corruption in a Small Texas Town. If you get the chance, listen to this week's Century of Lies. It's already online at drugtruth.net. It features Dr. Steven Ziegler talking about pain and the DEA's war on our physicians. And we also hear from Deborah Peterson-Small, and she talks about race, again, Tulia, how it impacts our whole nation, if you will. A quick news note. The U.S. return on a drug war investment. This is from Mark Hayden, Vancouver Health Authority. The DEA credits itself with having made drug seizures valued at $477 million in 2005. The most recent stats from the Office of National Drug Control Policy estimates that in 2000, the value of the illegal drug trade was $62.9 billion. That means that by U.S. government's own numbers, they intercept less than 1% of the drugs entering this country. Albert Hofmann, the inventor of LSD, turned 100 years old on Wednesday, January 12th. Here's a quote from him, derived from an article in the New York Times. "It's very dangerous to lose contact with living nature," he said. "In the big cities, there are people who have never seen a living creature. All things are products of humans. The bigger the town, the less they see and understand nature." And yes, he said LSD, which he calls his problem child, could help reconnect people to the universe. I guess that's about it, my friends. Please visit our website, Prohibition.org, and as always, I remind you, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. I urge you to please be careful.
To the Drug Truth Network listeners around the world, on behalf of engineer Philip Guffey, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage and the Unvarnished Truth. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.
Tap dancing on the edge of another.